As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide makes simplicity a priority so financial professionals can help their clients achieve their retirement goals. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
Broadcasting live to New York, Bloomberg 1130, to Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1, to Boston, Bloomberg 1200, to San Francisco, Bloomberg 960, to the country, Sirius XM Channel 119, and around the globe, the Bloomberg Radio Plus app and Bloomberg.com. This is Bloomberg Surveillance.
Good morning. It's 8:30 on Wall Street. I'm Michael McKee, along with Tom Keene. Our economic indicators are brought to you by Commonwealth Financial Network. When it's time to change the conversation, talk with a broker-dealer RIA that's ready to listen. Call 866-462-3638 or visit commonwealth.com to learn more. Let's go to Vinny Del Giudice at the Bloomberg First Word Desk for the income and spending numbers.
Michael, good morning. Consumer spending topping forecast, up 1% in April, adjusted for inflation, also topping forecast, up 0.6%. Personal income up 0.4%, in line with forecast. Inflation gauges attached to this report, all indicating tame inflation. Again, consumer spending up 1% in April, topping forecast, income up 0.4%. At the Bloomberg First Word Desk, I'm Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Radio. Let's go back to New York.
Vinny, thanks so much. Mike, let's digest the economics before we get to Deutsche Bank. Here, pretty much on plan, I mean, is what I see, real personal spending higher than survey.
Yeah, and that's important. It does suggest that Americans, after some weak spending numbers in the first quarter, have come back. 1%, now you had a revision to March from a tenth gain to flat. So it's really a nine-tenths gain, but that's two-tenths better. And 1% is a very large increase. Even inflation adjusted, it's a 0.6%. Personal income's up 0.4%. And I was just looking at the numbers, Tom, and within the personal income breakdown, wages and salaries were up 0.5%. That's the strongest since January.
Yeah.
And that's what really matters to people is what they have left over. Disposable income's up 0.5%.
Exactly. And get real on real disposable income up 4.0%. That's really a very better than good move. I don't really see it in the 2-year yield yet, but that'll be worth watching. I'm also looking, Mike, here. There it is, the savings rate. Wow, 5.4%
for the month of April. It's down from 5.9, but it suggests that people were willing to spend.
I'm looking at the first quarter number. I'm sorry, 5.7.
So, the important thing here is this is the most recent of the numbers. It's not part of the quarterly figures yet. And then the inflation numbers. This is what the Fed is watching, and the month-to-month numbers come in stronger than they have. The PCE month over month up 0.3 as opposed to a 0.1 gain in March. And on a year over year basis, we're up over 1%, 1.1% now from 0.8. So inflation moving in the direction the Fed wants to see.
It's amazing. And what you don't see, folks, that we get with our great statistical team at Bloomberg is on the Bloomberg screen in the famous amber and black. More than any other survey, Mike, when I look at personal income and spending, it's a real snapshot of what we're actually doing with our money. It's not esoteric 35,000 feet economics. Not that we would ever talk about esoteric 35,000 feet.
We would never be
economics
esoteric
with Megan Green of Manulife Asset.
She's the chief economist there, joining us from Aston today.
She's not one, two skyscrapers to gaze out west towards Fenway Park and the first place Red Sox. Two skyscrapers.
Tom loves
new John Hancock and old John Hancock. Megan, good morning.
These numbers.
Good morning.
These numbers, Megan, are I guess you would put them in the category of, if you had a scale, they would be on the side of weighting the Fed towards moving in June.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I have always thought that the markets were underpricing the probability of a June hike. I think if the Fed can possibly justify a rate hike in June, they'll go ahead and do so. The biggest risk, of course, is not what's happening in the U.S. It's this Brexit referendum in the U.K. The Remain camp has started to pull a bit ahead, so that could mollify the Fed in terms of hiking in June. But, you know, the other alternative is to wait until July. The only problem with that is that then we don't have a press conference. So the Fed could try to communicate everything very clearly for a rate hike in July at their June press conference. If they're going to do that, though, financial conditions will tighten, so they sort of might as well just go ahead and hike in June.
Yeah, I mean, that's what everybody's saying, July, and we don't worry about a press conference. But, you know, if you don't do it in June, you pretty much have to come out in the statement and say, we're going to do it in July. If that's what you want the markets to do, and as you say, just why not do it? The numbers, well, we've got a whole week of data here, but when you see the inflation numbers, it does suggest they're getting what they want.
Yeah, it's certainly getting closer. Janet Yellen has repeatedly mentioned that the better inflation data that we've seen over the past 6 months may be transitory, particularly looking at core inflation or core PCE off the back of year-on-year comparisons dropping out of some of the healthcare data. So that's put upward pressure on it, and that won't be sustained. So, you know, the big question is whether Yellen and the rest of the FOMC think that is sustainable or if that is transitory. No matter what happens, incidentally, I think that the U.S. dollar will continue to strengthen, whether the Fed hikes in June or waits until December, partly because of what the Fed does, but also because of what every other central bank will be doing, which is easing really aggressively.
Well, very quickly, 30 seconds left. How high does the dollar go? Because if it doesn't go too high, then the Fed's not going to care. As Bill Dudley says, that's kind of the point.
Yep. So I think because the foreign exchange channel for every other central bank is pretty impaired now, it will go higher, but not nearly as much higher or as quickly as we saw last year. So the dollar appreciated by about 20% last year. We won't see that this year. Maybe, you know, another 5% appreciation this year.
Megan Green with us with Manulife. She has another life. Her terrific, important article in Foreign Affairs magazine, Megan Green and Daniel Kellerman, on migration and immigration. Megan mentioned Brexit and Remain and the idea of the wild card being immigrant/migrant dynamics in continental Europe. That'll be an important discussion that we will talk about. She's very pessimistic on the Turkey euro exit. Futures up 3.
Let's check in with Michael Barr and get the latest world and national headlines now.
Mike, Tom, thank you very much. In 2014, the Brazos River in southeast Texas was bone dry. Today, it's a totally different story. The Brazos is forecast to hit a record crest in Fort Bend County, raising the flood worries in the region. At least 6 people have died in the area after 4 days of torrential rains and floods. A Brazos River Authority map shows all 11 of the reservoirs that are fed by the Brazos are at least 95% capacity. The small town of Thompson is about 30 miles south of Houston. Thompson Mayor Freddie Newsom was asked if his home is in danger from floodwaters.
I'm going to be able to stay in mine. I've got waters around me, but I don't think any of it will be getting into my home.
Newsom has been leading voluntary evacuations in his small town. South Korea's military says North Korea's latest rocket fizzled today. It is the 4th in a series of high-profile failures that somewhat temper relations and worries about the North pushing quickly toward its goal of a nuclear missile that can reach the U.S. China wants to strengthen relations with the Philippines and incoming President Rodrigo Duterte. Chinese President Xi Jinping made the statement after bilateral ties have been strained by tensions over conflicting claims in the South China Sea. Global News, 24 hours a day. I'm Mike LaBarre. Mike, Tom?
Thank you, Michael. Time now for the Land Rover Parsippany Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with John Stasha.
All right, Mike, the Warriors not only made regular season history with the most wins ever, they became only the 10th team ever to win a playoff series after trailing 3-1. Remember, they lost games 4 and 5 by a total of 52 points. But after the comeback win in game 6, they came home, spotted Oklahoma City a 13-point lead, but won the third quarter 29-12. They won game 7, 96-88. 3-point shooting carried them. Both Steph Curry and Klay Thompson broke the previous record for most threes in a series. Together, they made 62. They made 13 last night. Curry had a game-high 36. And the NBA Finals is a rematch of last year. Cavs and Warriors starting Thursday in Oakland. Was last night the last game for Kevin Durant with the Thunder? He'll be a free agent in a month. Stanley Cup Final underway in Pittsburgh. Two rookies, Brian Rust and Connor Sears, scored a minute apart first period for the Penguins. San Jose with two in the second. Stayed that way till late third when Nick Bonino scored. Penguins won 3-2. Game 2 is tomorrow. The Yankees, who won Sunday with only one hit, managed just 5 last night. A 4-2 loss at Toronto. Like last week, Marco Estrada beat Ivan Nova. The Mets over the struggling White Sox, 1-0. As for one day anyway, Matt Harvey looked like his old self. 7 scoreless innings. Neil Walker's 7th inning homer, the only run. New first baseman James Loney makes his debut tonight. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashow.
John, thanks so much. You look at equities, bonds, currencies, commodities. A churn here, very range-bound recently, but news flow up and coming over the next few days. Futures up 2, Dow futures up 31. The VIX trading before the opening up 0.75 big points, 13.87. So that's just a jumble right now. Mike, when I walked in the door, the 2-year 0.93%. Lower yield over the last 3 hours, 0.9185. Still elevated over where we were long ago and far away on a Friday. Did you have a good weekend, Michael?
It was a great weekend.
Did you go to X-Men or?
No movies.
Alice in Wonderland?
We went to the beach.
Went to the beach?
Beach. First beach weekend.
There was no icebergs in the water?
Icebergs in the water.
It's early for me.
No sharks.
It's like one day, the third week of August, where I'll put a toe in. Good morning.
The Sports Report brought to you by Land Rover Parsippany. If it's in your nature to cast off the everyday and seek adventure, the Discovery Sport was built to help your search. Visit LandRoverParsippany.com or call 1-800-FIND-4WD. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. This update is brought to you by the American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 85 years. Learn more at ADR.org. Consumer spending climbed in April by the most in almost 7 years. Consumer purchases climbing 1% last month after a little change in March. And personal income climbed 0.4% for a second month. Great Plains Energy agreed to buy Westar Energy, the biggest utility in Kansas, for $8.6 billion as power companies across the U.S. facing weak demand and rising operational costs look to consolidate. Treasuries losing their edge over stocks as the U.S. economy expands enough to push the Federal Reserve toward raising interest rates. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P E-mini futures up 2 points. Dow E-mini futures up 29. NASDAQ E-mini futures up 6. DAX in Germany's down 0.3%. 10-year Treasury down 0.8. The yield 1.88%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.4% or 20 cents to $49.54 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.4% or $4.50 to $12.12.20 an ounce. The euro, $1.1149. The yen, 111.17. And hackers infiltrated Time's MySpace social network and made certain data available in an online hacker forum that was shortly before the Memorial Day weekend. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Tom and Mike.
Karen, thanks so much. It is 8:48 on Wall Street.
The following is from Bloomberg View. Opinions and commentary from Bloomberg columnists.
I'm Justin Fox, a columnist for Bloomberg View. After almost a century of making cars and selling them in more or less the same way, automakers are worried that the business of automotive transportation might be about to change radically. Now, car makers sell vehicles to customers, through dealers usually, and often provide financing. In a future dominated by self-driving cars, it may be that car ownership will give way to on-demand mobility. A car shows up, takes you where you need to go, and moves on to the next passenger. That's what Uber and other ride-hailing companies are banking on. And lately, auto executives have been falling over themselves to collaborate with and invest in these companies. Just this week, Toyota announced an alliance with Uber and Volkswagen with Gett, a Tel Aviv-based rival. It's understandable that the automakers want in on what may be the future of driving. In a world of on-demand mobility, though, it's Uber, Gett, Lyft, and their ilk that will be interacting directly with consumers, building brand loyalty, and gaining knowledge. Somebody has to build the vehicles that will shuttle us all around, so there will still be automakers. But the cars they make risk becoming interchangeable commodities. I'm Justin Fox, a columnist for Bloomberg View. For more Bloomberg opinion and commentary, please go to BloombergView.com or ViewGo on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg View.
And Bloomberg View commentaries can be heard hourly weekdays.
The Brexit vote. Coverage continues now on Bloomberg Radio.
We are back. Megan Green is the chief economist at Manulife and is somebody who follows what is going on around the world very closely. She's been talking up the situation with Europe lately and immigration, and that is the key issue for a lot of people in the Brexit debate. Megan, you said it might put the Fed on a pause. What is the real issue in terms of immigration for the United Kingdom?
Yeah, I mean, I could sit here and make sophisticated economics arguments for why the UK should absolutely choose to stay in the EU, but I think for Joe Sixpack on the street in the UK, it really does come down to migration. And there's real concern among a lot of people here that they are foreigners taking their jobs, but they're overwhelming their schools, bankrupting their national health services as well. So if the UK does choose to leave the EU, it will end up having to leave the single market if it wants to cut down on that kind of immigration. If you look at the actual statistics, however, EU migrants in particular contribute massively to the UK economy and are actually net contributors to the government. So they are providing more in tax revenues than they are system. So unfortunately, the arguments are all wrong, but, you know, it's never stopped politicians from ignoring statistics.
Actually, I think it would be in Britain, it would be Joe Sixpint, not Sixpack, right?
That's right.
The argument from the pro-Brexit camp is that maybe they could do something like Norway and still have the trade relationship without having the full membership in the EU, and therefore without having the overwhelming bureaucracy that they decry. Would that work? Is that a possibility?
Well, so if the UK were to choose Norway's model, it would still have to pay a lot of money into the EU budget, and it would maintain a financial services passport into the rest of the EU, so it would still be part of the single market. But of course, the UK would have to accept EU citizens working in the UK as well. So it would be part of the, you know, free movement ability to work. Like I said, the biggest reason a lot of people are voting to leave the EU is presumably that they're against migration. So the Norway model wouldn't actually solve that issue.
Give us an update on this from your study of this and your work with Foreign Affairs magazine. I just went to the Telegraph, which I believe I can say, folks, has a clear tone towards approving of Brexit. And there's a tweet or a live whatever on their website. The English Channel could turn into the Med, quote, with fleets of small boats coming over, unquote. This isn't Dunkirk, but it's almost a Dunkirk mentality. Within your research for your foreign affairs article, how prevalent is that within the EU and within Great Britain?
Well, so I think that argument is actually right. If the UK leaves the EU, it will be easier to stop migrants coming from other EU countries, but it will be much harder for the UK to stop refugees, for example, from coming over. And that's mainly because the UK and France currently have an agreement so that border controls happen in France. That's why you have a massive refugee camp in Calais, or have had one. The second the UK leaves the EU, the French have already said that that border will move right on over to the UK, and so that will become the UK's problem. So you could see boats going across the channel. So I do think that that's a real risk, and it's an argument that hasn't been made a whole lot.
Let's get an update, as long as we're talking Brexit, on Grexit. You had written earlier this year that July would be the time to watch because the migrant crisis was in, would be in full cry then with the weather. But if the deal with Turkey holds, have the Greeks dodged a problem for now?
Yeah, so I think that probably the can has been kicked beyond July now. It looks like Greece will get its next tranche of funding. Don't mistake that for the Greek crisis being solved, of course. It just means that we'll get through until this fall before Greece will come back into the headlines. And you're right, the EU-Turkey deal has slowed the trickle of refugees into Greece significantly. That may also because the border between Greece shut around the same time. That EU-Turkey deal is unraveling as we speak, though. I think it's a matter of months before it falls apart. So Erdogan will certainly drag that out as he tries to extract more from the EU. Right. But I do think that it will fall apart and we'll see refugees flowing again.
One more question, if we could, Megan, very quickly. Will this debate be enough of a momentary, sudden, or exogenous shock to change the vote? I mean, are you that strident about it?
I don't think so. I think that it will be pushed off beyond the Brexit referendum. The one thing that could really shift the Brexit referendum would be a terrorist attack, and I think that's a huge risk.
Thank you, Megan Green. Greatly appreciate it with Manulife. Not only your work on the domestic economy or research notes on the Fed, but also an important article, again, in Foreign Affairs magazine. Mike, this is what I love about our guests. They have these tangents they go off on. It's like William Stanley Jevons, who dragged us into marginalia in economics, the calculus, the next, if you will. He also studied sunspots in his spare time. You know, did the whole sunspot thing way before the modern day. Megan, just with the cottage industry there, smart thinking.
She's on top of that stuff, and is kind of one of the go-to people you want to talk to. Here's a really interesting statistic. There are people who look at these things. We were talking about Donald Trump and the fact, obviously, that people either love him or hate him. How does it show up economically? Pricenomics, which is a website devoted to statistics in economics, looked at, with the help of one of their travel search engines, data on bookings at Trump hotels. They found bookings at Trump hotels are 59% lower than the same period a year ago. He seems to have offended enough people that they don't want to stay in his hotels.
Well, yeah, the notoriety on that, I'm going to say 10 weeks ago is when Kay Oberman lives in the Upper East Side in one of his towers, and I believe Kay Oberman exited. He got which is no surprise that Keith Oberman
most of these towers, he doesn't own most of the apartments and things with his name on it. He just leases his name to it.
And Keith was at a Mets game and somebody was making a joke about where he lived and he said, that's enough. I don't need this.
Trump International Hotel in Las Vegas bookings down 71% over a year ago.
Wow. Yeah. That's something. Anyways, and thanks again to all of our Sunday guests. We did Chuck Todd today, and we'll have many others through the week. But I really can't say enough about Bloomberg Radio and the effort Sunday beginning at 11 a.m. to be informed about the Sunday discourse. We're very proud that we can bring that to you. Futures up 3, Dow futures up 33. Yields now higher. The 10-year yield, 1.89%. Bloomberg Surveillance.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcasts.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV+.